You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. This week it's Fanboy Versus
ourselves.
Movies? I guess movie news. There we go.
Image of Thor. We can say
that's
that.
That's where the image of Thor. It's Fanboy Versus the image of Thor.
There is no versus involved in that because we're on its site.
Yeah.
Right. Where we support.
Well, I am. I don't know about you guys.
That we're opposed to. No, it looks good. So we'll talk about a little bit of news. We'll get into comics. You know, since we weren't here last week, we'll cover, of course, some of last week and this week as well.
That was definitely Fanboy Versus the Volcano last week.
Yes, God. So yeah, that was there's a couple of reasons we didn't have a show last week, but yeah, primarily big freaking volcano pyroviles with the yeah. So anyway. We're all over the place this week. So we'll talk about some news, we'll get into the comics, and then we'll go from there. So this week, of course, myself, JD, I'm here. We've got Triplett, we've got McFeely, and Kilby is here-ish. And Ender, unfortunately, could not make it today. He is out, where did he get called to? Sinestro Corps? I don't know. Anyway.
Yes, clever comic book reference and move on.
Okay. Obligatory, just because yes. I made it. So...
Gonna have to like put a prefab list of those things together.
I know I need to have them. I'll just have them set aside in. It's
I
like
the start researching that. Stuff. Yeah,
all the way to the Dire Wraith's homeworld. No,
he's Limbo. Sealing the rift at the Medusa Cascade. Okay,
real new Soundwave territory there with that.
Yeah, that's a little too.
You've been watching some Doctor Who lately, have you?
We have a friend of ours. We've been catching up, and so over the past,
are you caught up, JD? How far are you caught up?
We still have to watch Flesh and Stone today, but Brian is screaming right now. He's like, "Get to the comics!"
but
anyway,
comics.
Yes, yeah. There's Doctor Who comics. Right, that covers it. No, we had a friend of ours that we've been trying to catch up. So in the past like 2 weeks. We've gone all the way through Martha Jones and Donna Noble, and now we're up to the special. So,
that's a good one.
Super marathon.
So, yeah, it's been crazy. So, anyway, news. Let's start with the kind of lame, not lame, but just not exciting. Batman 3 2012, yes?
The world will end before then, so.
July
20th.
Okay, yeah, the world will still be around by that point.
Yes. What?
Yes.
Going up against. I'm kind of doubtful myself. Just I don't know why, but it's like you know.
It's gonna get pushed back. It seems like that's too quick.
Why?
I don't know. Well, I guess for Batman, it's not too bad because it's more of a.
I mean, he's finishing up his movie now. Back. Once he gets that movie done, now I mean, just you know, boom, just do it.
You can knock that out in a couple weeks.
You know, and of course it's mindset, right? Like, when I think of a comic book film, I think of, you know, 3 to 6 months for shooting and then a year for post, you know, at least. And, you know, for Batman, it doesn't take that because so many of the effects are done principal because it's just that's the look and feel that he's going for. So, maybe that's doable. I don't know. So... Screw me. But supposedly Superman maybe as well. And that one I'll go, doubt it. or maybe I just don't want that to happen. I don't know.
Now, is the Superman coming out pretty quick because of the whole deal with DC maybe losing him?
What?
DC is in the process of the families of the two creators are trying to reacquire the rights to Superman.
That
so
won't.
DC might actually lose him.
That won't happen.
It'll never
no,
happen.
I don't think that
I hope
happen.
Not. But yeah. I've heard kind of thoughts that, you know, this is kind of the reason why Smallville has made it to season 10. They're milking Superman as much as they can on the off chance they might lose him.
Why would they not milk Superman? I mean, nothing else.
Yeah, really.
They cannot milk Superman anywhere else.
Yeah, but why would they do a Smallville season 10? That makes
because
no
it makes money.
Because because it's cheap, it makes money. The production.
I'm watching it. Who's the other person watching it?
There are lots of 14-year-old girls watching it, Chris.
Yeah, exactly.
I know him. He comes into my store. I know him. I know the one other guy.
Wonderful.
There's, I guarantee, there's enough people to keep it going. Come on, it's like semi-syndicated on, like, you know, whatever.
It's
that,
on Friday nights. It's like the dead night of television. Nobody watches TV on Friday nights.
Yet they have to make television, so.
But something has to go there, and since.
It's like Law and Order. That's what should go there, if it hasn't already.
Okay, there aren't enough of those either.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry to digress.
No. It's a valid point, but I don't think those two things are connected per se. I mean, yeah, I understand the family's been trying to get the rights back, but Warner Brothers is going to eventually. What will happen is either Warner Brothers will win the rights, or they will pay out whatever amount of money they have to keep it, because it's going to be.
That one.
Of absolutely no value to anybody but DC.
Yeah, but isn't there disputes where like if you can get like a product out by a certain time, and if the rights revert back to them, then any monies they
but
made
they have
off
it
the
out.
Product.
The primary property is a comic book. They're putting out Superman comic books every month.
Yeah,
I know that there was an issue with the Superboy name. I know they had lost that name for a while.
Oh, really?
That was a while.
Oh yeah, that was a while back then.
I didn't know they
lost it or something.
No, it was more recent than that. That was the whole reason during the Sinestro Corps War, they had to switch from Superboy Prime to Superman Prime because they had lost the rights to the Superboy name.
I had no idea. That's entirely new to me.
I don't think that was why they killed off Superboy, though. I know that's. I think that's going around as like a bit of legend that that's why they killed Superboy at the time. But I don't think that's true. Although I think they probably did have to wait until because like if you notice like in 52 and whatever, when they talk about him, they only ever talk about Connor.
They just call him Connor?
They never talk about Superboy?
Yeah, well, because those two things happened. Well, yeah, because Connor dying happened before. That happened in...
it's Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis.
And then Superboy was, you know, gone at the end of that, and then when they brought quote-unquote Superboy back during Sinestro War, he was grown up and was... Superman Prime.
Maybe Superman Prime in Countdown as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but then they won it back, and he became Superboy Prime again in Legion of Three Worlds. So.
Right, because I think they got it back after that. So I think it was in dispute at that point. So I think the courts had said, look, you can't use the name until we get this figured out.
So. Yeah, and then the issue surrounded Smallville as well, because it's like, what constitutes Superboy?
Yes.
Because it wasn't just the name, like, it was the whole concept of Superboy and Smallville and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Wow. I know too much about this for hating Superman. Damn.
You know, if again, I just
don't understand why you hate Superman either, so I'm not going to open that. I'm just going to say I don't understand it, and we'll move on.
Okay, you know, if Clark from Smallville was the de facto Superboy, Superboy would be older than I am.
Yeah, depressing.
Yes. I mean, he's Superman now. They just don't call him Superman, and he can't fly.
Yeah.
Lots of rumors surrounding the way this season's going to end, whether or not they're going to...
So the Jonah Hex trailer, huh? It's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
so
then,
yes, thank you. Jonah Hex. So that trailer happened, and it's pretty good.
Want
I don't know what you guys think.
Hate, but can't. To
yes.
Awesome.
Dude, Josh Brolin, Jonah Hex,
now,
come on.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but does the... Does it seem like from the trailer that basically the series and the character have the name in common, and they've sort of taken some creative license with the concept, or is that am I off base on that? I'm not very familiar with Jonah Hex, so
I think the Jonah Hex concept is whatever you want, like a weird Western tale to be, basically.
I mean, they seem to have. I mean, basically, everybody's hang up seems to be that he seems to have some kind of supernatural powers in this. And that's kind of a legitimate complaint because the character, I mean, I can't really say one way or the other because I don't know from Jonah Hex either. I don't know much about
I've
him.
I've never seen him have any supernatural.
I know he doesn't have powers, but it's like I'm not invested enough in the character to care that they've done that. But I see why people are getting in a tizzy about it.
Is right. Batman in this? That's all that matters.
I dug
it somehow.
Just some dude shows up in the shape of a bat, and he like throws a batarang and knocks some dude out, and then he just disappears, and he says, "Thanks, Batman." That's all. Thanks, partner. You can say thanks, partner.
Yeah, but like you say, I mean, Jonah Hex can sometimes be whatever you want it to be. There was that period, wasn't there? I don't know when it was. Was it in the 80s? Whenever he got transported to the future and ran around with lasers and stuff.
Seems like you can either have him be like a traditional Western tale where he's just as traditional as you can get with a Western story, or he's fighting like giant robotic scorpions with laser guns, and it works. Either one, yeah. I will watch.
It goes yeah, on there was some...
No, I thought I had read something that said that he did sort of go through a Mad Max period, if you will.
It draws unfavorable comparisons with Wild Wild West, of course.
So,
but yeah, crossbows the.
But hey,
what are you gonna do?
Megan Fox in a corset and Gatling guns on a horse. I mean, come on.
And John Malkovich is the villain.
Yeah, there is that. There is that.
So, I'm triple sold.
It's like these words that you're saying do not sound like bad things, you know?
So anyway.
It's a mildly interested right now in wait and see if it's going to be awesome. Probably not, but I think
I'm pretty
be
sure it's
awesome
going to
it.
Be terrible, but it might be terrible enough to be good.
Yeah,
I've got a feeling it's going to take my money.
Yeah,
I've got that feeling. They're going to get me for my money either way. Regardless of whether or not it's actually good or bad, they're probably going to get my $10. But, which, you know, props to them. So, in other bigger news, we finally have an image, and I mean an image in quotation marks, of Thor.
Capital I. Image.
Image of Thor.
Now, they put the image on the Marvel website.
Yes. And it's part of a costume, but I'd say it looks good. I mean, it looks like you would expect, right? You know, it looks like what you would... I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, and it wasn't not that, so...
Am I crazy, or are they going after the new costume? Because it kind of looks like that. That new suit that he's got when he came back.
Well, see, I love that because there was, but like most of the, well, the art in Thor when he came back was great, but like the thing that really struck me about it was that it rested very comfortably somewhere between traditional four-color superheroes and some kind of real mythical battle armor. It worked both ways, and they've really... I mean, if the biggest complaint I could level at it would be that in this light, without the finished effects, the arm looks maybe a bit plasticky. I think I'm doing all right, you know. He's rocking a beard.
Yeah,
yeah, and he's got like a beard, which
bearded
is totally
Thor
awesome.
Is just like a just big rubber stamp of approval on that.
Yeah, I've always liked bearded Thor.
Bearded Thor. I mean, I guess they're probably thinking Ultimate a little bit whenever they've given him the beard, but. Thor rocks a beard.
Yes. So I think we're good.
Did you guys see the picture of the Destroyer this week? Hold on. I gotta share. This leaked earlier this week.
Yeah, I saw the Destroyer image. That looks pretty cool.
Oh yes, it does. So this is the thing. I was saying to a friend of mine just on Thursday night before we went to see Iron Man, there you go, that what they want to do with Thor is they want to put the Destroyer in it. So then I came home from Iron Man, and there was the Destroyer had been leaked online. I was like, yes! All companies should listen to me.
Oh, well, there you go.
And it's just the Destroyer. It's not screwed with or anything. This is going to be awesome. But then the very next day, like, we get that picture of Thor. There is nothing bad about this.
No, I think this is going to be good. So, yeah.
I want Thor Girl next.
Thor Girl? Oh, God. Thor Girl. So speaking of Iron Man 2, McFeely, you actually got to see Iron Man 2?
Yes, I did. Thursday night. Well, without spoilers, because you're all Americans and you don't get it till next week, I'll say that it very entertaining show. Really enjoyed it. Not as good as the first one. A little too, it's very much more of the same. And that's not a bad thing inherently, because, you know, it's more of a good thing. But it doesn't take the idea to any new places. It plays it very safe. It doesn't push the envelope at all. The stakes aren't any higher. And there's some repetition of theme as well that seems a little bit pointless to me. And it does spend a not an overwhelming amount of time, to my mind, but a noticeable amount of time serving just as a sort of trailer for the Avengers movie. But still very good. You know, very good. There's a few too many instances like where off the back of the success of the way Robert Downey Jr. free-formed it in the first one, there's a few scenes where you get the sense that they just sort of wind him up and let him go. And he just sort of ambles on in his Robert Downey Jr. sort of way. But it's all solid overall. I enjoyed everybody in it, really. Everybody did a good job. War Machine was pretty... I liked Don Cheadle more than I liked Terrence Howard in the first one.
Good.
That's because I always thought Terrence Howard was far too soft-spoken, and he had a perfectly spherical head. And
Don Cheadle does this thing, I think, called acting. Terrence Howard has no personality.
Yeah, I mean, Rhodey should have a hard edge to him. And they play it very well in this, actually. I mean, I wasn't sure what the justification would be for him getting the armor on or clashing with Tony. But they played it really well. It's a little bit Demon in a Bottle. A little bit Armor Wars, a big bit the first movie again, and a bit trailing the Avengers.
I'm really getting sick of this Armor Wars bullshit. Pardon my French.
Yes, I mean, I know. It's like that's how Invincible Iron Man launched. That's how the new Iron Man Legacy series chose to launch. But it's not really what this is about. It's purely the idea of other people possessing arc reactor technology. It's not stolen. Nobody's stolen Stark's work in this film. I can't say too much.
It's not unclear. I mean, it's pretty clear from the trailers that's sort of the direction that they're going. And my problem is I think it's just lazy writing. I mean, there's plenty.
Well,
not
I don't
a
know.
Lot,
that story needs to be told. I think that's whenever you're reintroducing Iron Man to, not, you know, in many cases, introducing Iron Man, if you take the trilogy as one thing. I think the Armor Wars is a pretty inherently logical second act. The invention of the new technology in the first one, the arms race that it creates as other people try to replicate the technology in the second, and it better friggin' be the Mandarin in the third.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me for some final thoughts, and I rattled off a few, and I realized it was nearly a haiku. So I refined it and turned it into a haiku, and Iron Man 2 in haiku is the first one. No, hang on. How did it go again? I've forgotten my own haiku now. First one is better. Too much Avengers setup. Where is the Mandarin? Because, I mean, without spoilers again, there is no foreshadowing of the Mandarin in this one at all. It's not like where you had the Ten Rings as the name of the terrorist organization in the first one. There is no reference to them there's no reference to the Mandarin in this one that I could see.
The Mandarin, so that we can get to Fing Fang Foom. But anyway.
Yeah. And you do have to stay after the credits.
Oh, well, duh. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but just so as you know.
I don't know. I guess I agree with you, McFeely. That I guess you would go to the second act with the Armor Wars. I think it's just... It just seems like every time I crack an Iron Man book or something's going on, it's the Armor Wars. And it just feels
Recently,
done.
We have had... I mean, that's how Invincible Iron Man launched. And the new series, Iron Man Legacy, that just kicked off, like, what, 2 weeks ago there? I did start off with somebody using...
And Iron Man this week is going that way, too.
What's this week? Oh, I haven't read this week's. I really, really have to.
Well, I'll get to it, but so we'll make it go full circle. Are we ready to talk about comics? And I can open with that.
That sounds like as good a lead in as I've ever heard.
I think you should do it.
So apparently, I'll go first as well. So I read Invincible Iron Man. Because I'm really trying desperately to get back into the series because I really like Tony, and yet, my problem is I feel like we're pretty much at the point where the comic is trying to tie to the movie now. Mm-hmm. And so you've got the daughters of Hammer trying to sell armor tech to the military. And Tony's trying to get out of the military sale. He's trying to get out of selling armor, essentially, and trying to sell his power technology. So he's trying to sell the repulsor technology as an energy source to the world. And of course, so they sort of finally explain the whole memory gap thing. I guess at one point he had backed up his memory to the main computers because it had, like, he had fully biologically, I guess, integrated the armor into himself. So he was able to make a backup copy of his brain. Well,
the Iron Man of Zur-En-Arr.
Well, you know the old adage, save early, save often? Apparently Tony missed that part. The save often, because like his backup was several years old, like pre-Civil War.
It was like before Cap died and Civil War and all kinds of stuff, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And, I mean, he literally, it's not just like he's got bits and pieces of memory. It's like nothing. Like, he never lived it.
It's like Marvel's wanting to forget about Civil War and Cap dying.
Yeah. Wonder
what
that's
all
about.
Well, I think we all knew that they were going to have to do something about that eventually.
And this is much better than saying that he was a Skrull and he was just being evil.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't invalidate his actions.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't, because, and he's even saying that. He's even like trying to apologize for things that he doesn't even know that he did to people. I mean, which is an interesting way to go. Again, it's better than memory wipe or hey, I was an alien or a robot or whatever. You know, he knows it was him and he ultimately knows he made those choices for a reason, even though it wasn't him and he doesn't have any memory of that. So, and of course, he hangs out with Thor for a minute. So,
which is good.
You know,
awesome.
So, you know, they hang out in Broxton.
So they don't fight?
No. They actually Thor offers him all the treasures of Asgard.
Because that's the sort of good bloke Thor is.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's like, because even Tony's like, so what? Are you going to like try to kick my ass now? And he's like, no. I thought I'd try and help you out, so you can have all my riches and shit. We've got it, and you know we don't care about it.
Did Tony lose his money? Because, like I said, I haven't read Iron Man in a while, so I don't know what's going on.
So he's
penniless.
He's pretty much completely broke, which is why he's going to be selling his repulsor technology.
Oh.
So yeah, he's trying
to
rebuild. Well, he wasn't there to like run
the economy
and everything. Yeah, so now they're starting. He's wanting to start up. What's the company he's calling it? Stark Resilient, I think is the name of the company.
The economy messed up him, and Peter Parker lost his job. See, Marvel's making it real now. They're making it real. That's what it is.
They're keeping it for real. But hey, you get to see.
It's going to take him about 5 minutes to get his money back.
Yeah,
that's pretty much.
This has happened
again. Selling the free energy Repulsor Technology should pretty much do that, because he's selling it commercially. He's wanting it to power televisions and computers and blenders. And, yeah, you know, it's a bad idea, but whatever. But hey, so then you get to see the new armor, which looks to be some sort of weird combination of the old skin tech that they were using like several years ago.
It does actually seem like a very skinnish sort of armor. It's very slender.
So, but the there was like the liquid metal skin tech that he used about 5-10 years ago.
Was that the Extremis?
This is
no,
like
even back further than that, aren't you? You're talking about like skin. Yeah. What's it called? Is that geez, that's like 2001.
Yeah, it was back when I was actually subscribing to the comic. Huh. Yeah. But yeah, but it's weird. It basically just melts out of nowhere and tears his clothes off, which is really strange. But
well, that's how the Extremis armor was stored in the hollows of his bones, wasn't it? So it came
the Extremis out of was him, wasn't it? I mean, like he had sort of become part of the armor.
The undersheath had that was in his bones or something. I mean, this is from this coming from a guy who didn't read Extremis, so I don't know.
Yeah. I read it. You didn't miss anything.
No. Yeah, well, that's so when anyway. I dropped it. I'd spent years reading Mike Grail and John Reber, and
I mean, it took Warren Ellis to write Iron Man. It took Warren Ellis to write Iron Man to get me not to want to read Iron Man.
Same here. But I'll tell you, it was purely because I recognized that it was just going to be perpetually delayed, and it was. So I was like, you know what? Screw this. I haven't enjoyed Iron Man since Kurt Busiek left it. I'll draw a line under it now, 4 years later.
Here.
But it's reasonably not completely the movie design, but not entirely not the movie design. So
looks pretty different from the movie design overall.
Yeah, the helmet's very similar, but the rest of the body is completely different. So that's good. Good stuff. But anyway, yeah, a little weird. It looks like they're trying to bring in the Hammer character again with his daughters, and it just kind of, as I was reading...
He already had one.
So it looks like, I think there's two of them. I think there's like two of Justin Hammer's like daughters that are in this.
Had one daughter who was the Crimson Coil back in Thunderbolts in the late 90s. I don't know how many... I suppose he was pretty old. He probably had a few offspring running around.
Well, and they're all trying to sell... this technology to the military. So I don't know. I just, as I'm reading it, I'm like, okay, that's for a movie tie-in. Okay, that's for a movie tie-in. Okay, that's for a movie tie-in.
Bringing Hammer's family back into it now is as obvious as bringing Stane's family back into it when Invincible Iron Man launched was.
Also mentioned. And they also mentioned Stane in this.
Well, he was kind of a big body in the course of the first story arc of Invincible, wasn't he?
Yeah, and so, but yeah.
So when does Mickey Rourke show up?
Yeah,
well, they already did. They already did the miniseries with Whiplash.
Oh, they did. Aww. Yeah.
But I don't know what that
looks like. Does he look like Mickey Rourke now? Has he got long hair?
I don't know what that miniseries was about.
Metal looking teeth or something.
I don't know if that miniseries was supposed to be introducing a new Whiplash or if it was what. Because I mean, I remember speaking of old Iron Man. I mean, Whiplash was killed by the sentient armor back in 2000.
Right before that.
Or Blacklash, it hasn't been around for 10 years. So maybe that's what that miniseries was about, was introducing a new Whiplash. I didn't read it. I just know they did Iron Man versus Whiplash earlier this year.
Yeah, because that was the whole thing that tipped off a lot of that stuff was when the sentient armor killed Whiplash. And yep. So. And other stuff that I read that we'll go ahead and talk about. Read Spider-Man Siege, in which Spider-Man and Venom and Miss Marvel have an impossible fight on the quote-unquote streets of Broxton.
That was pretty cool. Oh, come on, that was
the fight is cool. Yeah, no, the fight is fantastic. Pretty crazy, especially when you have like Miss Marvel, Venom, flying around and going completely crazy, and a naked man wandering around.
Was the naked man Matt Gargan?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was it? It was like, power comes from his suit. Well, let's see what happens when we take the suit off. And Miss Marvel just reached down Venom's throat and pulled Matt Gargan out.
Yes, which was brilliant.
It did make me laugh.
She completely showed up like Spider-Man in the whole issue, which was really funny. It's like every time you turn around, she was doing something that was just showing him up.
And it's like, why was Ms. Marvel's series never this funny?
Not to derail or anything, but is Ms. Marvel going to be on the new Avengers team? I don't know. Is she?
She hasn't been shown as one of the members.
She needs to be badly.
She's without place or purpose now, so
she has no book.
Yeah. She should be on a team. Yeah,
put her on the Avengers. It'll make me happy.
She's a great team character for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. And I'm looking at this. I'm loving the part where you see like Broxton disappearing off into the distance. Anyway, I can't handle it. I'm sorry. I can't handle it.
So like, what is it
you can't handle again? I forgot already.
I grew up there, all right? In Broxton, there's nothing but a one-story, maybe 1,000-square-foot post office.
But what you don't realize, JD, what you don't realize is in the time that Asgard showed up, that town started getting bigger. People started moving.
It exploded.
It exploded.
They built cities that looked like they were made in the 40s. Yes.
Exactly.
Because it's Oklahoma, and we're all backwards. No, it's just funny because the city that they're showing is actually smaller than the city that I grew up in, which is the larger city in the county. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. It's my own hang up. I just think it's funny. So what else did I read? We'll go back. I'm going to go back, I guess, to last week because we did have Green Lantern, and we'll probably hit on this, I guess, a little bit. I missed out on any. Was there much? Well, no, we didn't talk. Did we talk 2 weeks ago? I don't know.
Yeah.
Where are we at as far as Brightest Day?
We talked about the first issue, number zero.
Okay, so we have not talked about Green Lantern, Brightest Day, in which there was a lot of more awesome than there was in the previous. So where did I go with that? Okay, so. Yeah, that was much more interesting than the Brightest Day Zero, which I don't know how it couldn't not be, but definitely had the great opening of who the hell is this guy and why does he have parallax chained to.
I'm just flat out impressed that like Geoff Johns has clearly been thinking this far ahead. You know, we're just done with the biggest of the big, Blackest Night, and it's like, whoop, hit the ground running, right, here's what's coming next, coming directly out of it. Some bloke in a cloak who wrote the Green Lantern Oath is out to capture all the creatures from the Spectrum. And it's
yes.
Like, holy shit! I mean, that's makes a lot of sense as a direction to take this in after you've it's like a further direction to take this whole idea in. I mean, and while at the same time it's reaching back even further into Green Lantern mythology, into the past, just Geoff Johns.
Yeah, bravo, sir. You will get more money from me. Yeah, and of course, I mean, it's a little bit of a revisit of the where are they now for the current. I guess you'd almost call them lead lanterns for the current color spectrum. Mm. Which maybe that needs a whole series of its own. Who knows?
Oh, they don't need more books. Trust me.
No, really?
One more new one, you know.
No. Hmm.
We got enough Green Lantern books. We don't need any more.
No, but who does need is Larf Lees. Man, this guy needs.
He wants some land. That's what he wants.
Oh, that was great.
That was beautiful.
Geoff Johns cannot go one Superman story without dropping a movie reference, can he?
Yes.
What is land? I want some.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I like Larf Lees. He's probably my favorite.
Two great characters to come out of this entire series is Larf Lees and Saint Walker. I have to say I'm starting to find myself being interested by Saint Walker, just because he's so damned optimistic.
Did you ever read the Tales book? I think it was like one of the Tales books before the whole thing kicked off, and it kind of showed how Saint Walker got the blue ring. That was good. I like that.
Yes. And that's what makes it even more interesting to me is because he's, after everything, after being through all that, he's still like, no, it's all good.
Yeah, he still has his faith, even though he lost everything.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated by that.
I love that scene in the issue where he's just going from grave to grave, blessing them or whatever. One by one, and it's like it says so much about the character in like three panels or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But what I want to know is what the hell is going on with Guy Gardner?
He's getting his own book.
Well, yeah. But I'm trying.
It's something that Hal's not going to like.
Hey, apparently, some deal with the Red, Lantern. So
is he going to be like the Assassin's Group, the Black Ops Green Lantern Group? That's kind of what it sounds like. It's like that's exactly what it is. Secret lanterns.
The lantern bolts.
Yes. Oh, God. So anyway, I felt much better because I think after Brightest Day Zero, I was kind of like, man, this is, I don't know what we're doing. And now I'm like, okay, we're going to be okay. You know, we're going to be all right.
I mean, Brightest Day number zero, we said it last time, was basically a trailer's book, you know.
Yes.
Didn't give you any really clear direction about anything. I mean, there were plenty of. I mean, like the Hawk stuff. I'm interested in after Brightest Day Zero, but then it's like, you know, Hawk and Dove. It just showed us that they're the same as they ever were and what they do, and that's it. And Firestorm is like, oh, look, the two of them are Firestorm. Like, we didn't see that coming or whatever.
We didn't
get a lot of forward motion out of Brightest Day Zero. Very much setting it up, but. Brightest Day number one is next week, so probably be this week by the time you hear that. But looking forward to that.
And so then I'll wrap up with. I won't wrap up, but I'll move into Green Lantern Corps for this week, which was not as awesome. Nonetheless. No, it was okay. I don't know, of all the things that have happened, of everything that's gone on, of all of the questions and all of the concerns that everybody has had throughout the entire Green Lantern Corps, they're going to knock down the doors to the meeting room for the Guardians and said, hey, we want a screw.
What?
That is the most.
Are you sure your reference is right, comic?
Yes.
That's basically what happened.
That is exactly what happened. Of everything, of all of the lying about Blackest Night, of everything the Guardians did over the course of the entire series, they break down the doors so that they can complain to the Guardians that they can't screw each other.
Awesome. Is it Kyle and, what's her name?
Kyle, Guy, and Arisia, or whatever.
Well, she's more pissed about Sodom,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yes.
Okay.
And the Guardians give in, too. The Guardians are like, well, okay.
Well, we'll rewrite that rule.
Yep. We'll appeal the third law. In the first place, then. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you stopped the Blackest Night. We'll give you something.
Yeah. So that was it. I mean, that was where I was kind of like, huh, really? That's where. Well, I guess the other big news ish is that Kilowog is not going to be drill sergeant for a while. He's taking a leave of absence from doing the training. So, and they did release new rings out, so there will be new Green Lanterns coming home. Oh, and the dude's legs got cut off and sewed back on with the lizard guy legs. So that's exciting as well, but sort of weird. Okay. So.
He should have Green Lantern constructed legs, you know, like glowy robot legs or something.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But no. Yeah,
they'll go away whenever his ring runs out. Yeah, when his ring runs out, then he'll just go.
Just fall over. Oh, yes.
Brian, just delete that. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, there's Brian. just for a note of awesome, Deadpool 22. Come on, fighting hillbilly moonshine runners.
That's always fun.
You can't be, especially the beginning sequence where Deadpool has this dream that he's fighting Thor, and Deadpool has this like enormous two-handed sword, and he's going to go at it with Thor. It's priceless. So anyway, so yeah, so just pick that up just for fun. Nothing really described there. It's just it's Deadpool. It's good romp and awesome. If Ender were here, he would agree. But
I'm sure he would.
Okay, so there we go. So moving on, Triplet, what you got for us?
Nothing from this week. Haven't read any comics this week, but I do have, let's see, Justice League of America 44, which I think might have been from last week. I'm not sure.
Yep. I think that was from this. Oh, no, actually, I have no idea.
Yeah, that was last week.
And I have no idea what's this week and what's not anymore.
And I think last week might have been Ultimate Spider-Man number 9.
No, yeah, maybe. I don't know. It all arrived in a big pile of boxes at the same time.
it's the Spider-Woman story is what it is. I don't think there's an Earth 10. Yeah, I'm behind. And I've read some Secret Six.
Yeah, boy!
Thanks to you, I now am almost caught up on Secret Six.
Almost. Oh, well, that's definitely a good use of your time.
Because I went and I bought up back issues, and I don't have everything, but I have the last six issues to read through.
It's basically what their Blackest Night tie-ins and the last...
most of it's Blackest Night.
See if you can get yourself the Suicide Squad Blackest Night one-shot as well, because that's part of that story.
I didn't get it. I'll have to see if they have it, which I doubt they will, but... I can look around, see if somebody else has it. But yeah, you convinced me with your Catman is from Taken.
That's right.
On the last show, I was like, yeah, I'm buying this book.
That was really fun. I really did enjoy that.
Converted.
Yeah,
100%.
Simply hearing the description.
Yes.
No, from reading the issue, it was awesome.
Yeah, the issue is, yeah, it was something else.
I can't wait till I get to it, so... But I can, like I said, I can talk about Justice League, and I did read Green Lantern, which you just talked about, so there's not much to say about it. So I can talk some Justice League, and I can talk some Ultimate Spider-Man number 9. So Justice League of America 44 is another Brightest Day crossover, and Mark Bagley's art's still very freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, I don't know what in the heck's going on in this book. But it's gorgeous. I mean, like page to page to. I mean, it's. I love it. I don't want him to leave Justice League. If they ever get to the point. Go ahead.
I think his DC contract is up sometime soon, you know.
Damn it. Don't say that. But I want him to be on the book if they ever can actually get Superman, Wonder Woman. And you know, Bruce Wayne Batman back, because I want him to be on the book for that. But I
just read
like you just
Trinity.
Said, I've got Trinity, and I have read it, and it is awesome, what I've read of it. Yeah. I haven't finished it. Still working on it. It's a very long comic. But, I mean, Justice League, it just, he works. He works on a team book. I mean, it looks great. And the demon Etrigan shows up, and he rhymes.
Rhyming is a sign of, like, a writer who cares.
James Robinson.
I love James Robinson so much.
Who read Wednesday comics?
I have read the first two issues.
I read most of it, not all of it.
Because the demon was in that with Catwoman. And I read the first, whatever he was in it, and I was like, oh, he's not rhyming. And I was like, you know, it's weird how much it annoyed me that he wasn't rhyming. But then I got to the end of the strip one week, and he rhymed on the last... speech bubble, and it was at that point that I realized that his entire dialogue for that strip from start to finish had been like in iambic pentameter.
Ah,
like a classical poem.
Okay, how awesome it is for Demon awesome. For Etrigan to rhyme is right here. And Starman's power, though strong and bright, mine stronger still and laced with spite. This rock of green I'll have and hold while you and yours lie dead and cold. That's awesome! God, read this book.
Etrigan's a douche.
God, it's awesome. So, like I said, it's just another Brightest Day crossover. The JSA show up in it. It's beautiful. I mean, the art's beautiful. That's the reason to check this book out.
Well, crossover and, in the sense that Jade shows up at the end. I mean, I don't know.
I was getting to that, actually. I know we were talking about where's Jade going to show up, and I think that somebody said, well, maybe she'll be on Green Lantern Corps. So is it possible that she's going to be on the Justice League now, James Robinson's Justice League?
I think that's where she's Mark Bagley drew the picture of her in that montage image at the end of Brightest Day number 0. So okay. I figure she's going to be hanging around there for a little while.
Because it's just like a weird team of Justice League. Like it's Dick Grayson Batman. It's Donna Troy. It's that ape dude. It's that I guess he's the newish Starman guy. I don't know what his name is. The blue skin dude. I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
but you know all those characters from the that mini series that James Robinson did before he took over the reins of Justice League, the one with what is the name of that? Help me out.
Oh, Cry for Justice.
Cry for Justice. Yeah, it's basically you know everybody from that plus you know Dick Grayson, Batman. So there you go. But it's good. I liked it. There's not much going on other than they fight the demon over some big green rock, and it turns out that the big green rock is Jade for some reason.
Yeah, seems a little odd that.
Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man number 9. Not much going on, but I mean, those characters, the mother and daughter villains, you guys remember those?
I do.
Philly, you read it?
Yeah.
They come back. They show up. Have you read this issue?
I have indeed.
Okay. But the only reason I mention the issue is just for the whole deal with Human Torch is hitting on Spider-Woman. Yeah. That's just... Oh, man. That's just creepy as hell. I mean...
It's like Peter won't tell him what the deal is.
I mean, she even looks like Peter Parker. It's like he would notice... Like, is she like your sister or something, or I don't know.
She's got a longer head.
I mean, because like she even looks like her, like looks like him. It's just creepy as hell. I don't know. There's not much to talk about. I mean, it's
a pretty funny issue.
It's a pretty funny issue, but it kind of comes down to my problem with Ultimate Spider-Man that it's now $4 an issue. And it's basically just become like this kind of comedy book between him, Human Torch, and Iceman, and just like you know whoever's in the house. It's almost like a frat party every issue.
Well, I can't argue with you.
It's just not what I want from Ultimate Spider-Man. Which I don't even know what I want from Ultimate Spider-Man anymore since you know I've got Amazing.
Yeah, it's very true. It doesn't serve to fill that niche anymore the way that it did before One More Day happened. And there's a lot of characters sort of dueling for the spotlight now at this point instead of it being the lead Spidey book. But I'm still enjoying it. I still put it pretty highly on my stack, you know. I still enjoy reading. I love the scene in this one where they make him cut his hair.
Yeah.
Because his head looks perfectly round in the mask. Now, I'm assuming that this is just reacting to all the complaints there were online about how round the head looked on the cover, and they're making a joke out of it now, which shows good humor.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, I like the humor, and I like what they're doing with it, but it just seems directionless. It seems like I don't know where they're leading with this. Like, Ultimate Universe imploded... You know, a while back, and now Ultimate Spider-Man is just kind of waiting for whatever in the heck they're going to do with Ultimate Comics.
Yeah, well, once Norman Osborn got finished off for good, there seemed to be no great threat behind Spidey anymore. No big threat gunning for him. I mean, you know, the big stuff that's really been happening in the book, even really since the start, has revolved around Kitty. It's just that we didn't know it was Kitty for the first six issues.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting stuff, like the cloaked figure, the ultimate shroud, I believe that was supposed to be, or the ultimate hood, something. And now, you know, the turning point of this issue is about her, and it looks like the next issue is going to focus on her quite a bit as well. I mean, in a sense, Ultimate Spider-Man has, for good or for ill, kind of become the dumping ground for the cancelled Ultimate titles.
Yeah, and I think that's what my problem is. I mean, maybe they're doing that on purpose because it's $4 versus the $3 it was before it got canceled and rebooted as a new number one title and everything. But I don't know. I don't like that. I mean, we're 9 issues into this new series, and what actual sort of Spider-Man villain has shown up? Mysterio? Is that it?
Yeah, but you could say the same thing about the first 6 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man. Green Goblin, that was it.
Yeah, but I don't know.
It's just
I mean,
the way Ultimate Spider-Man is, you know. You go through the 6-issue arc and it's a baddie. I mean, they made such a deal of the fact that there were 2 villains in the 3rd arc that they called it Double Trouble.
I think I just have Ultimate Spider-Man fatigue. I think I'm just...
That's fair.
The art's nice. I think
I love
the art. Nice.
I really love the art on this book.
But I don't know if I like the art. Like, I like the art like when he's in the costume. I think, like, if he's fighting someone in a costume. But I don't know if I like the art for, like, the people. You know what I mean? Because it's, like, it's very manga-ish.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe that's I think that might be.
And I don't have a problem with that. I mean, it's just that it's kind of hard to... In my mind, it's still, you know, Mark Bagley. Is what Ultimate Spider-Man should.
It's true. It's very rare that you do. That's one of those cases. Like, it's very rare that you do get, like a creative team so associated with a comic. You know, it's like Miller and Hitch on the Ultimates. You know, nothing's been as good as it was under them.
Yeah. But, you know, it was, it's a decent issue. No problems. I'm just saying, like, I think I just have Ultimate Spider-Man fatigue. So, yeah, that's it. I'm done.
Okay.
I've griped enough.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine. All right. So, what you got for us there, McFeely?
You know, I don't even know. This is the thing. I read so many books this week. I read 20 books in this week. And they've all kind of washed over me. Because I had to get them read by now.
Yes.
I read 13 books on Wednesday evening, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't even know where to start, really. Well, you know, I'll tell you where I'll start. I'll start with Thor, because Thor's one I've been meaning to chat about for a little while now. This is is this the third part? Yeah, this is the third part of Thor's Siege tie-in. But it's not actually about Thor, that's the thing. It's about the other Asgardians. It's about the Asgardians reacting to Ragnarok. Dealing with... they haven't... Is there anything with Tyr in this one, or Tyr, or how that's pronounced? I can't remember. You know, they were doing stuff with the Asgardian god of war, Tyr, who was afraid he, or Tyr, however it's pronounced. He thought he was going to die because the Asgardian sage had predicted that the god of war would die during siege, stuff like that, you know. And they're dealing with Baldur and his trust of Loki. And there's a great showdown between Baldur and Loki in this issue as well, you know. And Kelda meets the parents of the Bill, the mortal boy that she'd fallen in love with. And Volstagg is just awesome.
Is he drinking?
He ain't drinking. Volstagg is kicking some ass. Actually, he doesn't even kick a lot of ass in this one. He just stands around and beats imposing. I mean, he managed to get Asgard to fall on the evil Thor clone last issue when it collapsed.
Awesome.
So, you know, yeah, he took care of that one. And it's like the start of this issue is the ruins of Asgard and Volstagg looking dead in the rubble.
And then he's like, he opens his eyes and goes, "No, not yet. Plenty of time to be dead later. I still have D to attend to." And awesome. He hauls himself out of the rubble and goes to work. You know? And he's just huge and intimidating. And old Stag is pretty... It's like he tries to turn himself into the police because of his role in Siege. And the police are like, "No, you know, you just saved everybody from that Thor guy. Whatever happened, you know, it can wait till later." And he's like, "Yes, you're right. I will make sure that those most sorely in need of judgment receive it." And off he goes to get into the thick of it. Volstagg is great. I've really loved the focus Volstagg has been putting on this as well. And Loki has a bit of an old rant, you know. It's like there's this great panel like where Baldur is finally, you know, Baldur's calling him out on everything that he has done, and he wants to know why he's done it. And this is what we were discussing this with Ender. The last time I was talking about the Thor, and it's like Loki says, "You want to know why, and it's because I am the god of mischief. Would you think Tyr would lie down and make chains of daisy heads with the maids? Would Heimdall snooze away the day when danger lurked on the horizon? I am Loki, the fire that burns. And why does the fire burn? I know not, but I am he." And it's like Loki doesn't even know why he is the way he is. He just knows that he is, so he does what he does without even really knowing it. I really dig that.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't put any more of a lie into what Ender was saying last time about Siege happening because Loki's a dick, but it explores why he does the things he does because he does them because he is and doesn't know another way, and he's found himself trapped in not knowing another way, so he's taking it to the extreme. Yeah, I mean, I think this is doing some of the most interesting Siege backgrounds. Oh, there's an awesome bit as well where the Hood tries Baldur shines with light, being the god of light, to summon all the Asgardians around him, you know, and the Hood takes him for a pretty easy target and just shoots his gun at him. And there's the awesomest bit where Baldur has his sword up and he catches the bullet on the blade and spins the bullet around with his sword and sends it flying back at the Hood. And it's odd. I mean, I just looked at it and I went, "Oh, yeah. No way." And then the next panel is the Hood going, "No way." right before the bullet explodes. And another side note is this, the art duties on this are split between two artists. One is Billy Tam, who I think most people know. But the other artist who I want to draw attention to is Richard Elson. Who's probably not a name that many American readers will know, but if you read the Sonic the Hedgehog comic, the UK's Sonic the Hedgehog comic, Sonic the Comic, back in the early to the late 90s, he was its premier artist and is cracking. I'm really pleased to see. I've seen he did the Hulk Marvel Zombies Return one shot a little while ago, and he's shared both of these all three of these Thor Siege tie-in issues with Billy Tam, and I have loved this guy's art since I was like 12. So I'm really happy to see him doing more stuff for American comics, and that's Thor, I think. Now, what else did I get this week? So much stuff. Well, Ultimate Avengers ended last week, and Ultimate Avengers 2 started this week. So I got both of those. Yes. Because Avengers 2 is drawn by a different artist, hence it was
now,
able
the,
to...
The Red Skull story, is that what it was that ended?
Yes. The Red Skull story ended in Ultimate Avengers, and then a new story starting in Ultimate Avengers 2. And
Mark Miller, is he writing
it's Mark Miller's writing 2 as well. I gotta say, wow. I think 2 is gonna be better than 1. I don't know what it is about Ultimate Avengers. It just didn't click, you know. I don't think it had enough of the bombast of the that I just want from the Ultimates, you know. It's like it kicked off pretty well, like back in issue, I think it was issue 2 when we had James Rhodes' car transformed into giant War Machine armor. That was pretty awesome, but I don't think it ever got more awesome than that. Although this is kind of cool. I mean, there's some cool moments in this. You know, when Captain America's lying trapped in the mangled wreckage of a jet and the Red Skull's looming over everybody with the cosmic cube, and all the Avengers are defeated, collapsed on the snow, and Captain America's demanding the precise coordinates of the Red Skull's position from Hawkeye, and Hawkeye wants to know why, and Cap says it's because you never miss and I never lose. Awesome. And he proceeds to use the coordinates to this jump as this is a teleporting jet. It's he jumps to Moscow in a very brief period of time, and he uses the Triplett. Do you read this or am I spoiling?
No, I don't care. I was reading Ultimate Avengers and then I dropped it because, like, I said, I am so sick and tired of Ultimate Avengers. I want real Avengers back. That's why I'm waiting for the new book.
Soon. Well, and he proceeds to use the coordinates then to teleport the jet a very short distance and spear the Red Skull.
There you go.
And that's how you beat the Cosmic Cube. There's no snatching it, there's no battle of wills, there's just nose cone of a jet through his chest. And that kind of sums up attitude to the Avengers. But then the Ultimate Avengers 2 is, it seems to be said a little well, basically they're trying to properly set up this Black Ops team. And like the first 8 pages are just the Punisher silently killing as many people in as many different ways as possible. And then the Avengers bring him in, and basically Nick Fury is, how do we keep a useful guy like you off of death row?
Oh, they offer him a spot, don't they?
Yep, they offer him a spot. They're trying to.
Oh, wow, it writes itself.
Yeah, they're trying to find a Captain America figurehead for their Black Ops team, so they even put him up in the Punisher Captain America armor from Punisher War Journal from a year or two.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So and this is drawn by Lionel Yu as well, who I prefer. Well, see, it's funny. I mean, Carlos Pacheco drew the drew Ultimate Avengers, and I quite like Pacheco's art. It's gone through quite a bit of change and evolution in the. In the length of time he's been drawing comics, certainly you wouldn't really recognize the artist now as the same artist who was drawing, Fantastic Four in 96 or whatever. But it just doesn't. I guess maybe they took him on because he works in a more realistic style now. He used with that more stylized European style. You know the sort of style. I mean, he used to draw that way, the Joe Mad school of back in the 90s, and he doesn't now, so I wonder if, if they were trying to recapture that Brian Hitch photorealism and falling short of the mark. But Lionel Yu, I really like Lionel Yu. I mean, I know a lot of people doesn't because he's very sketchy and loose in his style, but I really like Lionel Yu, and I wasn't too sure about Ultimate Avengers 2 after the kind of the lukewarm of Ultimate Avengers, but I think it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I like his art. I don't know if I would want his art to do Avengers characters, but I've always liked his art pretty good.
Well, I mean, he did New Avengers for a prolonged period there. I mean, this is the Black Ops team, you know. So it's it's been paired off with him in that way. What else? So Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four continues a basis. The newest issues from this week. This is the fourth part of the Prime Elements story. I was talking about it before. What was the last issue I talked about? Was it? It was the Universal Inhuman story. This is the basically they've been setting up the story where four cities will go to war, and
I'm caught up on that except for the newest issue, which I think came out this week. I read
spoilers then in that regard.
I mean, it's okay if you want to talk about it, go ahead, because I think the last issue I read was the one on the moon where all of the other Inhumans are coming from, you know, from the different races are meeting, and I think they're.
Well, that was last issue. Yeah,
that's the last one I read.
Well, this one is that we just find out that the fourth city is a city in the negative zone, which actually draws out of the stuff that's been happening over in, like, I think it's Guardians of the Galaxy, where Blastar's taken over the 42 prison in the negative zone and has rebuilt it into a city. That's the fourth city. And the cities are about to go to war, and it also it involves like some kind of cult that's sprung up in the real world around the negative zone, because we live in an entropic universe where we're born and we live and we die, but in the negative zone it's all, you know, this cult looks at the negative zone the other way. You know, this is the tagline on the cover: here you die, in the negative zone you can live. And the basically at the end towards the end of the issue, the Inhumans on the moon seeking a challenge to prove themselves worthy of the destiny that they know is ahead of them, like ruling over the Earth with Black Bolt. They attack the city in the Negative Zone, and thus the war begins. And I've said enough stuff about Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four already. Suffice it to say, you should be reading it.
Yeah, I've been really surprised with it, because when he jumped on the book, and it was like, because he jumped on like right after Miller's run, right? He was the next writer. Was there something between
them? Yeah. No, he came on anyway.
And I was thinking that, so I'd hate to be the guy. I mean, well, depending on your opinion of Miller's story, I was thinking I would hate to be the guy that follows Miller on Fantastic Four.
Opinion or not, you just really wouldn't want to be for the sheer name factor of it, you know?
But yeah, like you were saying, I think he's hit it out of the park, because I mean that first story got me pulled in, like at the last page where you've got the Mr. Fantastic from like all the different realities, and he's like, well, you want to help us to you know save the world, or he says something to that effect, like
solve
you want to help
everything.
Us. Something.
That was the title of the story.
That got me hooked right there. I was like,
yeah. And the fact that they were juxtaposing it as well with like the flashbacks to Reed's past and everything, it was just that Hickman just gets it in a way Miller never did. Miller focused on like the fantastical stuff and cranking it up to 11 and ripping the knobs off and ignoring everything else and just throwing craziness and craziness upon you. But whereas Hickman is also, his stories are also very driven by the fantastical, it's presented in a way like that the Fantastic Four are exploring and discovering along with the audience, if you know what I mean.
And that's what's so great about it, because they are explorers. They're gonna visit new worlds or go to new places that the other Marvel characters haven't done. That's what kind of sets them apart.
That's really become like one of the taglines. It's the tagline that's on every introductory page for the Fantastic Four. Now it calls them Imaginauts, and that's really been kind of like one of the defining things that's around the Fantastic Four since Wade and Waringo's run really brought it to the fore. But it's like with Hickman, it's as much of a voyage of discovery into the new and the weird and the wonderful for the AFF as much as it is for the audience. Whereas in Miller's run, it basically treated the AFF as just kind of taking it all as a bit passe and bombarding the viewer with the craziness without it really phasing the characters, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and it's not a world of difference, because the viewer is still bombarded with these images and these concepts, but Hickman's concepts are so much more Kirby for starters, and just the way they relate to the characters is he just gets it, and I want him to stay forever and ever.
So, like, when 20th Century Fox does their reboot of Fantastic Four, hopefully they're reading the comic now. And not reading, I don't know what they were reading before to make what they were making before, but
I read
the comic now.
I like the Fantastic Four films.
I think they're okay for what they were doing. What they're
they sway a little. They sway too far to the comedy side of things.
They did a good job with some of the characters' relationships. Like, I will go to the grave and say best Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm, reactions against each other. I mean,
those guys were the films, really.
They were the film, yeah. It's just that, I don't know, just when you see that movie and then you go and you see something like, like Spider-Man or Iron Man or something, it felt like it was not quite... You know what Spider-Man 2 was, or Iron Man was. It felt like, okay, these are like, I mean, their comic is the world's greatest comic magazine. It did not feel like the world's greatest anything to me, and that was the problem.
I never like reading that in the cover of Fantastic Four comics, because it always feels like it. I don't think Fantastic Four films, no matter how good they make them, will ever be the world's greatest comics to the common man. Because the Fantastic Four are a very, very Silver Age concept that you really can't modernize it, and you can't modernize what they do. You just have to embrace the glorious fantasticness of all of it. And I don't know how. I just don't know if they'll ever truly have film success.
You can modernize it, but then you get all the daytime drama nightmare that was all the craziness like that surrounded the Onslaught and everything that came before that. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I did enjoy Heroes Reborn, Fantastic Four, but ultimately it was still four people going up in a ship and getting blasted by light from space. You get so far. There is an inescapable datedness to the Fantastic Four that one just has to embrace. One, I don't think anybody will ever be convinced to love the Fantastic Four by modern tweaking of their origin. It's just, I think, you know, the Fantastic Four, for as much as they are Marvel's first family, they'll never be Marvel's top book. And I think most people who know that are okay with it. But at the same time, though, everybody really should be reading Fantastic Four right now.
Yeah, sorry to diverge it. Sorry.
No, at all. I mean, I don't know if there's any point in me. What else do we got here? Power Girl continues to be entertaining, but there's only one more issue of it being entertaining.
Is this new writing week for Wonder Woman?
Was what week?
Wonder Woman, did this start the new for Gail Simone, or had she been?
I think it might have started something new this week. I don't read Wonder Woman, so I'm not sure. But Gail Simone's not around for much longer. What else? X-Men Forever and X-Men Forever Annual both came out. X-Men Forever Annual showed us how Wolverine and Jean Grey had started to get it together before the start of the series, and basically involves them being captured by the Hand and having mystical hoodoo put upon them, so only continuing to reinforce my belief that Wolverine gets Hand hoodoo put upon him and then dies. He'll be coming back pretty soon. Tiny Titans, you've heard me talk about Tiny Titans before. If there's any joy in your soul, buy it. This issue features Trigon babysitting Kid Devil while Raven loudly objects. what do we got? The Torch, Hercules, Avengers versus Atlas was kind of confusing, honestly. More Hickman goodness in Siege Secret Warriors and Secret Warriors. Yeah, I got a couple of duplicated things this week. Yeah, I've talked about those before. The final issues of New Avengers and Mighty Avengers both came out this week. Well, it's not really the final issue of New Avengers because there's a New Avengers finale one-shot to come up and wrap everything up and I think put the Hood story to bed. But Mighty Avengers, I suppose, this is the final issue of this, and I suppose talk a little retrospectively about Slott's run, perhaps. Either of you guys read Mighty Avengers? Triplet, don't you read Mighty Avengers?
No, I read the first two issues when Bendis was doing it, and I decided that I don't like this book, so I didn't keep getting it. And then Slott did show up on the book, but by the time he was on the book, I just didn't care. I was like, it's like, you know, a book goes by, and then you feel like if you're going to jump in now, you're missing too much. I'm kind of that way with it.
Well, when Slott started, you really could have just jumped in. I mean, it might as well have been a new number one. It was completely unrelated to anything else in there. Well, this issue, the final issue here, basically it reveals that Hank Pym's Infinite Avengers Mansion, which is this subspace headquarters that the Avengers have been based out of.
Well, that's where they need to have it, don't they?
where Pym's put it right now. But it turns out that it's mapped to it's built around or built within or sort of coexists with kind of ill-defined the Wasp, who she was teleported away by Thor at the end of Secret Invasion, and it turns out Hank Pym found the dimension Thor had teleported her away to and built this mansion around her and all of its infinite facets and all of its aspects have helped preserve her memories. And he's been planning to try and revive her. So he has a bit of a falling out with Jocasta, naturally, as you might do, because they've been getting very cozy, and she didn't take that very well. So it's Jocasta and Hank and Black... What are their names again? I can never remember those characters' names. Ace and One-Eyed Jackie from Grandpa, Agents of Grandpa.
Jackie, what?
Yes. These two characters were created by Dan Slott for Amazing Fantasy 15, from the newer series of Amazing Fantasy a couple of years ago. Issue 15. The idea behind it was there were a lot of short stories in it, and the best one would come back for a mini or something. I don't remember who all the stories were, but that's where Amadeus Cho was introduced, for instance. And it's where I remember Robert Kirkman did a story about a superpowered firefighter called Monstro in it. I don't remember any of the other stories except for these, which were a selection of two-page shorts in that issue, which was about Ace and One-Eyed Jackie, agents of Grandpa, which was like a S.H.I.E.L.D. type organization that dealt with weird threats. And they accept it's a British. So they came after Pym because he was existing, operating outside their dimension or whatever. They came up after him. So now it's those two, Pym and Jocasta, trapped in Infinite Avengers Mansion as Ultron and his army of 1 billion, or is it 10 billion robotic brides, bears down on them.
Jeez, this sounds so geeky. Why am I not reading this?
I know. Meanwhile.
Maybe trade paperback or something.
It'll only be about 3 trade paperbacks. We'll collect all of Slott's run. So
there you go. I'll trade paperback at some point.
Meanwhile, the rest of the Mighty Avengers team are fighting the Thunderbolts over events that are happening in the Thunderbolts comic, and which kind of took me by surprise because I didn't know the Mighty Avengers were appearing in the Thunderbolts comic. Apparently, Osborn sent the Thunderbolts in to get Odin's spear in the middle of the siege. So the Mighty Avengers are fighting the Thunderbolts over that. Well, the much more interesting aspect of the book is Pym versus Ultron in underspace, and there are some pretty cool goings on in this. And he beats Ultron. He tricks Ultron, actually. It's actually kind of weird there towards the end as well. Like, we get a clip of something from Siege 4 that hasn't happened yet. Loki going up against the Void. It took me by surprise. It's hard to tell if, like, we're supposed to be seeing it beforehand or if it's something that should have come out after it, you know? I won't tell you what it is, to be specific, because it's kind of a spoiler for Siege 4, so I won't tell you what it is. But, and the issue ends with the Mighty Avengers assembling and heading into the final fray of Siege 4. As a retrospective of Slott's run overall, as much as I've enjoyed it, I honestly have to say it's not his best work. I can't really put my finger on why either. I don't know if it's just the art, because I don't like Coy Pham's work.
Is it because he came in after? Did he follow Bendis, or was there someone before?
Followed Bendis in as much as he wrote the next issue, but nothing Bendis did actually mattered for what Slott was doing. They're completely separate from one another. Mighty Avengers essentially continued into Dark Avengers when Bendis was finished it being about the government-sponsored Avengers team, and then this just totally turned into a different book about Hank Pym dealing with the death of the Wasp and setting up a new underground Avengers team the whole point of the book was to try and be a proper Avengers team again, you know, something that the universe hadn't had. That's basically the continuing, that's what Bendis tried to do when he started the book and failed at completely. And it's what Slott tries to do by putting like an Avengery team like Hank Pym and Hercules and Quicksilver and U.S. Agent and the Vision together as a team. But honestly, you know, I mean, I wish I could talk in a more detailed fashion about why it hasn't quite sat right with me. I love Dan Slott, but this just hasn't been his best work for ways I can't properly articulate. There have been some truly great moments and some truly great individual issues, but it's like, okay, there's a moment in this issue, the final throwdown with Ultron, basically, and Hank Pym bullshits vigorously as he claims that he's just received a call from his associates who have activated his Pym Wave broadcaster, sending a message across all space and time, summoning every single Avenger to this spot, and Ultron's like, "Bullshit, Dad!" And then Hank's like, "Avengers assemble!" And the final three panels of the page are doors from all throughout the Infinite Mansion opening. And I think I'm going to turn the page to an awesome double-page spread of Avengers everywhere, like every Avenger ever.
And then there's like a rather sparse 1.5-page spread of, is that even 24 characters? And I'm like, the art on this thing is never really delivered. You know? It's such a little thing. I honestly can't. I wish I could articulate more. But there's those little moments of slot brilliance in there. It's like after that happens and it turns out they were just ants with image inducers, which is brilliant. Like projecting fake images of the Avengers to scare Ultron off. And then it's like a door opens and Jarvis comes in. And it's like, sorry, I stepped out to deliver Mr. Stark's attaché case. Referring to that bit over in Invincible Iron Man when he brought his case by. It's like, that's what, because comics don't do that anymore. You never get this story takes place after the events of, but before, whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But Slott always steps up to it. Like, I think it was the start of the last issue, they were all sitting down to breakfast and talking about how, yes, they had just brought Captain America back into this time stream last Wednesday. And moments like that, putting the universe in order. And it's something Slott does, but there are a lot of good moments in Slott's Mighty Avengers, but I think overall it's a lot less than the sum of its parts. I think the first story arc was probably the best, the unspoken. But, honestly, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to classify the series a disappointment, but it just wasn't his best work. And, I mean, we know he's working on Spider-Man at the minute, and...
Which is fantastic.
And that's it. He's so good on Spider-Man. And he's got that's it. Normally he's self-admitted he can only do 2 books a month comfortably, but we don't know what his next thing will be. It is in the works though. It's a secret project that he hasn't been able to name yet. I follow him on Twitter. He's referred to it a few times.
Better be She-Hulk.
You would hope. I mean, he's got some contributions to this upcoming Heroic Age anthology miniseries, which starts next month, maybe. But that's going to be a great little mini with Slott, Kurt Busiek, Rick Remender, and Paul Cornell doing short stories. And there's going to be a Squirrel Girl story in there somewhere.
Yes!
She's one of the most
powerful figures in the Marvel Universe.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that mini, and I think it's going to bring me a bit more of the Slott I want, and I'm looking forward to hear it. It hasn't done anything to turn me off, and I just think it just hasn't been the shiniest metal on his chest.
You know, I think Dan Slott would do better. You remember Robert Kirkman's Marvel Team-Up book?
I do.
Dan Slott on a Marvel Team-Up book I think would be awesome.
If it was She-Hulk in every issue teaming up with somebody.
Yeah, basically She-Hulk teaming up with everybody. She-Hulk. There you go.
She-Hulk. Squirrel Girl.
Yes. Can we get that, please?
Yes.
God, please.
Squirrel Girl and She-Hulk. Come on. She beat Thanos. Deadpool. Yes.
Do it, Marvel. Do it.
Squirrel beats it. Funny.
Yeah.
So that's about me. I had a lot of books, and those are the ones that stood out this week.
Excellent. So there you go. Brian, you didn't have anything to cover, correct? I don't even know if Brian's...
Oh, Brian's run away again. You suck, Brian.
He's done. Yeah. He basically... He says he didn't
read anything anyway.
Push the boulder, you know, just give it a little nudge and let it roll down the mountain.
Well, tell you what, actually, it just occurred to me. I did read Captain America Reborn this week.
Yes.
So what'd you think about that?
I really enjoyed it, honestly. I sat down and read the graphic novel in one sitting. I just love the fact that, like, after all of the serious, like, heartbreak and the emotional drama and the death and the quest for truth, that it all comes down to a fight with a giant robot Red Skull in front of the Washington Monument. And they shoot it in the face with missiles. I mean, Brubaker.
I like the part where Red Skull and Cap are both in the same body, and Cap's like fighting him in his mind, and Cap's like, you know,
it always comes down to that all the truly great fights between Captain America and Red Skull. It comes down to will more than fists. A giant robot.
he's like, you're crazy. You're gonna kill yourself just to stop me if that's what it takes to stop you, Red Skull. And you know, Red Skull jumps out of his head.
I love as well as like, 'cause Brubaker's written the Red Skull as quite a refined, staid kind of villainy. You know, very mustache twirling, but not over the top. You know, so I just loved it whenever he gets booted out of Cap's head, goes back in the robot, and completely loses his shit. So whenever he gets grown super giant, he's just stomping around and talking about gnats and how they were infinitesimal. Crush, kill, destroy!
Oh, that's quality.
Yeah, it's like Brubaker hasn't really, for Captain America, written any big superhero set pieces like that. That's the kind of the funny. I guess I could say even readers of Captain America could almost consider it a negative, something against Captain America Reborn, because Brubaker's Cap hasn't really been about that level of visual crazy superheroics. But that just to me proved he can really do it, and it makes me all the more excited for his Secret Avengers. I've been getting through my graphic novels lately. I'm currently reading the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Collected Book Volume 1.
Wasn't that the original stuff?
Yeah, it's like the first 15 issues of the Turtles.
Cool.
Nice. So
I'm really lucky with it because it was in print for about 5 minutes. And then Nickelodeon bought it. Totally just stumbled across a copy when it came out of a box in a pallet.
Nice.
But then after that, my graphic novel thing is right. Once I finish that, I just have some mangas and the Secret Wars 2 omnibus and my long-standing graphic novel stack, which has never had fewer than half a dozen books on it at any one time, will be complete. But I discovered while reviewing future months just the other day that won't stay that way for long, because from the end of this month of May through to the end of June, through delays and advanced soliciting, I've somehow accrued a dozen different graphic novels that I have to get.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Gonna have to save a little bit before the end of the month.
Nice. Okay. So, I have no idea what's coming out next week, but I'm sure that we'll be there for it.
Bright's Day number one, I think, is the big launch for next
week. Yeah, that'll be...
When is Return of Bruce Wayne? It's not next week, is it?
Not next week. It's sometime this month. I think there are two issues due this month, so sometime
Sweet.
This month.
Sweet.
Probably yeah, it's supposed to be bi-monthly, correct? Yeah.
Oh, no, it's bi-weekly for the first month, but then it's one issue after that. So I'm guessing it's probably like the second and fourth weeks of the month will be this, and then the third issue is out in June.
God, can't wait.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Myself, actually. And Siege number 4 is out week after next as well.
Excellent. Finish that up.
No, nice. War of the Superman kicks off very soon as well. So, yeah, you know, things are all still ablaze.
Yep, it's we're getting into summertime, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and the new Astonishing Spider-Man Wolverine series that starts next week as well. So there's a few new things kicking off.
That'll be neat. That'll be a good week, maybe. We'll have some stuff. That'll be great.
What?
I don't know. Again, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm so out of it. We're trying to buy this house. We've been trying to close on it for a week, and so my brain is...
Well, before we go, did anybody say anything about Free Comics? Yesterday was Free Comic Book Day.
I have nothing to add there.
I didn't get any, so no. I didn't know if there was something awesome. Because usually there's like something awesome. Like a while back when... Dan Slott was taken over. Spider-Man. Remember the first issue of his thing was a free comic book.
Yeah, it was a brand new day issue, wasn't it? The one with
you got the first appearance of Jackpot.
Oh,
and a free comic.
I wish. I wish Free Comic Book Day was as much of a big thing over here as it is over there.
But ultimately, I mean, y'all get free stuff everywhere over there, socialists with all your free stuff.
Well, it's like stores
here in America, we pay for things. You know, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, stores have to pay for the free comics.
Right, well, whatever.
Even over there, but it's like whenever you factor in the cost of free, then currency conversion, it becomes...
yeah, it's not so free when you have to like ship it across the ocean.
Here, yeah.
Especially when you were possibly staring at the prospect of having.
I see all these. Oh God! I see all these pictures of like lines up around the block for comic book shops in America. And I wish it could be a thing like that. I just wish it could be a thing like that over here, but it's not. And on that
lines
note,
lines at comic book stores Here?
I've never seen lines in comic
books. I mean, you're talking for free comic book day? Or?
Yeah, for free comic book day.
Well, yeah, for free comic book day. That's because here, again, in America, we get so few things for free that when it is free, then we're all over it.
The only lines I see at my comic book stores is for like some sort of card game or something. That's it.
Yeah. Typically, yeah. If you see a line at a comic book store, that's for Magic the Gathering or something. That's not for comic books.
I think they're playing Bakugan now. Thank you very much, Jamie.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So
thank you, 1999.
Oh, jeez. I was having a discussion with someone. There was a couple of like older guys at work that were sitting there playing dominoes. I was thinking to myself, you know, I wonder, in like 10 or 15 years, will people be sitting around playing like Magic the Gathering like in their lunches, you know? Like old guys play chess? No? Not like that?
Okay. I doubt it.
We'll never be.
they'll be playing something on their iPads or something. They won't be interacting, but they'll be playing each other.
Just be playing like Draw. Sitting there with
analog card games.
Yes.
It'll be like the actual Yu-Gi-Oh! With the wristbands and the holograms. And
yeah. Oh, God.
With 3D TV already in the works, we're distressingly close to that sort of thing.
I know. Sadly. So. But anyway, so what have we learned? Well, we learned that America loves free stuff and.
I love free stuff too. I just can't get it.
You get free stuff all the time. Free healthcare.
Free stuff. Oh, I get free pills. Whoopee.
Yeah. I won't go there. Anyway, even though I did, but I won't. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Brian, somewhere, thank you for joining me. Here's the deal. Again, this is Fanboy Versus. Again, this is our, if you have no idea, that. For an hour and a half, been listening to us talking about comic books. We do have other shows. You can go to tfradio.net. There you're going to find the other mini podcasts that we put out. That's going to include Radio Free Cybertron, which is our flagship show that we talk all about Transformers there. You're going to find New Soundwave, which is sort of our general geek stuff show. There is Superhero Time. They talk about Sentai. Outside the Cage, which is all about MMA, fighting, that kind of stuff. So tons of great shows there. Here's the best part. We have a new avenue for you to listen to our shows. Go to tfradio.net/live. There you're going to find our Ustream. We are going to be streaming shows all day. So occasionally we will have live shows. New Soundwave is live every week. The last Wednesday of every month, we do Radio Free Cybertron live. But when we're not live, you can listen to the streaming show. And we'll be streaming all of our latest episodes there. So anyway, you can go to the live stream and you can listen to new shows. We're going to have a Wayback Day where they'll have episodes of old, classic Radio Free Cybertron episodes playing all day. So check it out again. So regular website, tfradio.net. Go to the streaming at tfradio.net/live. That's it. Go check it out. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining me. And yeah, it's great. Okay. All right, very good. Well, please join us again next time when it will be Fanboy Versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.